Welcome to Real Love, Real Stories TV and podcast. This is Kanu. I'm the host, and thank you so much for tuning in. This is the place to be to hear love stories. In the guest chair today, I have Shirley, and she's going to be sharing her love story with her husband. And this is a different kind of an episode because I have a request to you, the listeners. As you hear the story and hear the names that are being mentioned, and in particular, this person named John Brown was married to a lady named Betty Brown, who they met at Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix, Arizona. And I am on a quest to try and help them find their wedding pictures. So if you hear this, you know somebody with that name, we're not sure if they are still alive or even if they're still in the area or where they are at all in the world. If you know that family, please forward them this episode so that we can get Shirley and her husband's wedding pictures. And they are very important to them because they have no memory of their wedding. So I'm asking you, the listeners, to share this episode with people you know who, you know, might get us connected with John Brown, if he's still alive, and or his family, so we can get the pictures to Shirley. So thank you for that. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Real Love, Real Stories. Let's have you start by introducing yourself to the audience.
My name is Shirley. My husband's name is Dennis, but I call him Mitch. We've been married almost 55 years.
Nice.
So yes, we have our anniversary next month.
Oh, well, happy early anniversary.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you are here because you're going to share with me and my audience your love story. So since that's what we're talking about, how about we start by you telling us your love journey? How did it begin with you and Dennis?
Okay, I was between high school and college. This was the summer of 1964. I worked as a waitress, a night shift waitress at a truck stop in a little town called Black Canyon, north of Phoenix.
Okay, he was Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona, yes.
Okay.
He was in the Air Force. He had finished technical school in Denver, and he was being stationed at Luke Air Force Base, which is outside of Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And he was driving between the bases. Mm-hmm. He ran out of gas at about 3 o'clock in the morning in front of the little truck stop, bar, restaurant place where I worked.
Oh, nice.
So he came in, and the gas station was closed.
Oh.
The gas station closed that time because at that time there was not the freeway going through. We were off of a freeway. We didn't get a lot of traffic. It just closed down at night. I think the bar restaurant stayed open all night because bars. And so he came in and asked what time the gas station opened. I said it will open, I think, about 9. This might not be exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sat there and he talked. We talked a little bit.
Oh,
and then he went out to his car.
You were working in the restaurant?
I was a waitress.
Okay,
I was a very bad
right.
waitress, but I was a waitress. So he went out and he took a nap in his car. Mm-hmm. And when I got off, I went out and woke him up.
Mm-hmm.
And he left. And I thought he was kind of nice. He was cute. We were both 18 at the time. This is,
okay.
like I said, between high school and college
okay.
for me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was nice. I didn't know that I'd see him again. Well, that was the middle of the week. I was off Saturdays and Sundays. I didn't drive. I was taking the bus between Black Canyon and Phoenix, where my parents lived.
Mm-hmm.
He came up, he showed up before the bus, and he said, I'll give you a ride home.
That is so sweet.
So, yes, I thought this was nice. So he drove me home. And from there, he would come up occasionally on weekends, and we would go out and do things. He sold his car. He bought a motorcycle. I rode the motorcycle one time behind him, burnt my leg on the exhaust because I was stupid enough to wear shorts. And my father informed me that if I could win at such time, I could afford my own health insurance. I could get back on a motorcycle, but not until then.
Okay.
So that was how we met.
Yeah. So, but before you would get to him coming back, and so he gives you a ride the first day to your home.
Mm-hmm.
And then did he ask you out after that?
No, like, he would just show up. It was very casual.
Okay.
It was really kind of casual. He was... I'm trying to think how I was a little nerdy in high school. Mm-hmm. I had had one boyfriend only, and we'd broken up my junior year. And other than that, and he was a little, quite a bit more forward than I was used to. kind of a little bit cocky, kind of sure of himself. And I thought this was a little exciting, but, and it was kind of nice that he was coming up.
So, yeah.
Yes. So like I said, it was just, I was working, he was working, and he would, I would say every few weeks he would take me home. Memory, we're talking
55 years.
And I think I probably conflate incidences, you know, did this happen then? Or
right, what? Right.
But the thing is, I did go off to college in fall.
Oh, okay.
And by this time, he had, the motorcycle got not badly wrecked, but wrecked. And while he was waiting for a tow truck to pick it up, had called somebody and went someplace, someone stole it.
Oh,
so he
no.
had no transportation. And I was going to college in Tucson, which is, of course, 100 miles for people that don't know,
yeah.
about 100 and some miles from Phoenix.
Right.
So we didn't break up because we weren't really going together, but he would hitchhike occasionally to Tucson to visit with me.
Oh, that's so nice.
So I was thinking, you know, this is, he's kind of cute. He's a little cocky. But I will tell you the one incident that stood out in my mind mm-hmm. that made me change the way I felt about him. Mm-hmm. A little background. At this time, my father had taken a job that took him to Louisiana, outside of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
My mother had stayed behind to sell the house.
Mm-hmm.
So one day we would talk fairly regularly on the phone, my mother and I, and she said, did you ask Mitch to come and visit me? And I said, no. She said, well, he's been coming by in the evening and keeping me company.
Aww.
And he didn't ever tell me that. He
How
wasn't using it as
that?
A ploy. He wasn't using it to, you know, he just, and I thought, that's, doesn't sound like a cocky kind of
that is a
guy.
Very sweet thing because he knew your mother was by herself.
By herself. Now, over the my first thing was, oh, that was just so sweet. Over the years, I thought that possibly he was 18 and away from home, and he was probably missing his family.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
was something mm-hmm. you know. This was a mother
yeah.
that wasn't you know. Not a lot like his mom, but still.
Yeah.
So this went on. I started college. I was in the College of Nursing. I kind of panicked. I dropped out before the semester was over. I didn't even withdraw. I just kind of went, got a job as a nurse's aide in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still kind of coming up occasionally, buses and hitchhiking to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call. And he said, I've got orders. I'm being transferred to Fort Walton or to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida.
Oh, wow.
I said, well, will I get a chance to see you and say goodbye before you leave?
Yeah.
And he said, do you want to get married? That was my proposal.
But wait, he didn't, at this point, he hasn't even asked you.
No. The first thing he said about marriage was, do you want to get married?
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, there was no engagement ring.
Yeah.
He had looked, I think he told me later, he looked at one guy had one for sale. My husband Mitch had one stripe. At that time they called him an airman third class. I don't know exactly the nomenclature now,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't make a lot of money. And this was a cheap ring, but it was a cheap ring because several people had used it to get engaged. He thought that wasn't very lucky.
Yeah.
So he said, and I said, yeah. we're very casual.
But are you thinking at this point that you were in a relationship with him? I mean,
I think I thought I loved him.
Okay.
I thought I hadn't been going out with anybody else.
Right.
I think also that he was lonely and he wanted to marry somebody. It came out later that when he was in tech school in Denver at Lowry Air Force Base, he had gone out with somebody there. Mm-hmm. And probably if he'd been stationed there a little bit longer, she might have ended up being his wife. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think he was just, I mean, and we were very young. At this time, he had turned 19 in December, and I had turned 19 in February. Mm-hmm. So I basically took the money I would have spent for April's rent and bought a little outfit. We're talking now 1965. It was very Jackie Kinney-ish, little blue hat with a veil, yeah, uh-huh. a little slimline skirt and a top. Uh-huh. That was my wedding dress. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of had to marry him because I couldn't pay rent on the little apartment that I had rented while I was working as a nurse's aide and I'd given notice. Now, then he had talked to the chaplain at the base.
Before he asked you?
Actually, no. After we had, asked him, okay. We were trying to see who would marry us. Uh-huh. I was not a regular churchgoer. He wasn't attending services. I wasn't attending services.
Okay.
But he talked to the chaplain. Well, the chaplain says, you're very young. You haven't known each other very well. We'd met the previous June, but it was very sporadic. You know, we're dating right. like once or twice a month.
Right.
So he didn't think he could, in all consciousness, in good conscience, marry us.
Okay.
So we thought, well, we will go the justice of the peace route.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm sure I don't remember, but I'm sure we must have had blood work done somewhere. So we had that paperwork. Oh. And we knew at this time you had to have blood work done, I'm sure, before you got married.
Oh.
Blood tests. Oh, yes. To show, I guess, you didn't have communicable diseases, you get the little thing that says, yes, you're clear.
Oh, okay.
And then we knew at the time the law in Arizona was a female over the age of 18 did not require parental permission.
Okay.
A male had to be 21 or over.
So he's 19.
And he's 19. We knew this. So he had gotten in touch with his folks, and his mom had sent a telegram that said, I mean, we're talking way before texts or right, emails right. or anything like that. She'd sent a telegram saying, I give permission for my son, Dennis, to marry, and signed her name.
Mm.
So we went to the Maricopa County Courthouse mm-hmm. in Phoenix to fill out the paperwork to get the marriage license.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking and they're asking, you know, this and where were you born and all these questions. And then they're looking at the telegram, and the gentleman turns to Mitch and says, when did your father die? Oh. And Mitch says, my father's not dead. Oh, Arizona requires both parents to give permission So this is getting on toward the evening, and the courthouse closes at 5. So we find a phone. We make a long-distance collect call to a neighbor because his folks didn't have a phone. Get his mom on the line, explain the situation. It turns out his dad was out somewhere working and couldn't be found. So his mom sent another telegram, signed it with his father's name. 5 minutes till 5, maybe not quite that close cutting, but that's what my memory says. 5 minutes,
right
we rush into the courthouse, and here's the petition. Yes, here's your paperwork. Yay!
Oh, wow.
So then we go to the apartment of another airman.
Uh-huh.
I am going to mention names in this because this was John Brown and his wife, Betty. I met them for the first time that day.
Mm-hmm.
I got dressed in that apartment. We looked up in the phone book, a justice of the peace. We called and we got his directions to his house. For listeners that don't know the Phoenix area, Metro Phoenix is Phoenix and a lot of suburbs that are just jammed right up next
yes.
to it.
Uh-huh.
It's a huge area. Even 55 years ago, it was large. The judge lived in Paradise Valley.
Okay.
Where the streets are not straight. They're all little curved cul-de-sac
right.
neighborhood streets. So we're driving around. It's getting dark now. It's getting dark. And we're driving around, and we can't find the place, the address. Calle Estrellita, Street of the Little Star. So we stop at a 7-Eleven, and we find a payphone, and we call. And he'd get the directions again. And we still can't find it. And we call a second time and we get good directions. Now, what I haven't mentioned before is that this is all taking place on April the 1st. So we get at 9 o'clock, we get to the judge's residence where he works. He works out of his home. He's just the piece out of his home. Mm-hmm. We knock on the door. It's 9 o'clock. He answers the door in a dressing gown because he was sure it was kids playing a prank on him. And he didn't think anyone was going to show up.
So
to go get dressed to marry us. So we are married. John Brown takes out his little Kodak Instamatic camera mm-hmm. and takes a few pictures. The only pictures of my husband and I on our wedding day are in a camera or developed or somewhere with a man named John Brown who we didn't see again.
We never,
because we left within a week. He had to be in Florida.
Oh my gosh.
So we, this time, by the way, and I do backward digressions as I think of them. He had bought, before my mother left, he bought the 57 Plymouth that my parents had owned.
Oh,
my
father that's got the car he's driving.
He did get a car mm-hmm. by the time because we are driving to Florida.
Right.
And so that was my wedding day.
Wow.
Every once in a while, Mitch will say, it was just a joke. It was just a friend of mine. And I tell him, if you run a joke for 55 years, you've run it to the ground. It's no longer very much of a joke.
So, John Brown, have you ever tried to find him?
Not really. There is a way that I think you can go through an Air Force locator and say this person was at this base
in this
time period. Uh-huh. I'm not even certain of his rank. I think he might have had 3 stripes. And the thing is, even if he got it developed, it might have gone the way of pictures because he would be in his 70s now. I don't know. He might not even remember who these people were or his kids. You know how you have boxes of pictures and you look at them and nobody knows who the heck these people were because nobody wrote on the back of them.
Yeah.
It would be lovely. And occasionally I've thought about it, but I can see him in my mind, so I know what he kind of looks like in my head, my husband, when we got married, and what I looked like.
Now you're making me feel like we need to go on a mission of finding these pictures.
Like I said, I'm not really certain how to go about it other than, it would be nice if his name had been Stanislavski or something like that. John Brown, yes. Mm-hmm. Possibly knowing that he was married. And I think you could maybe advertise in the Air Force Times, but we don't read the Air Force Times anymore since my husband has retired.
Okay. So as you can imagine, time has passed and, so much has happened, right, in their lives. And Dennis was listed in the Air Force. They moved from place to place. Like they lived in Florida, they went to England, lived in Denver, in Thailand, Okinawa, and now they're back. And they lived in Utah as well. Now they're back here in Phoenix. So we're just gonna skip that part and now fast forward to 2016, and Shirley will take it from here.
That's kind of our story.
Yeah,
up to the not so great part.
Yeah, let's get into that because you did say to the audience that
there's a reason I'm using the basket.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What's
going on?
What's going on with Dennis?
About the end of 2015, I started noticing. This has probably been going for a while. I started noticing some odd memory lapses with my husband. Mm-hmm. We had padlocks on gates that he had set and he was not remembering the combinations, which were very easy. It was like 99. Well, one of them was like 92 something, but we even changed them. Just odd little things. Mm-hmm. And possibly your audience can realize this from listening to me go on. My husband is fairly quiet because I talk a lot. I talk a lot. I talk to him. I would talk at him. And so I probably didn't notice. I did, and our kids commented on it when they would talk to him over the phone, or we would drive down. Our son and our daughter, by that time, they stayed in Arizona when we did the Georgia to Germany to Florida. Mm-hmm. They were settled. They stayed here. Mm-hmm. My daughter and my son both got married. They had our grandsons, and so they were here. But we would come down 2 to 3 times a year, drive mm-hmm. down from Utah, stay with the kids, visit the kids, mm-hmm. visit my sister in Tucson, my parents for a while, and my mother passed away earlier than that, but visit with my father, and notice that he would repeat. He would tell you a little story, and then he would repeat the same story immediately, just mm-hmm. a little bit. Mm-hmm. I went out there and did this, and then I went out there and did this. And mention it, but you don't really think about this, but I started getting a little concerned.
Yeah.
So I looked up a test online that you could do, and I said, take this to your doctor. And he came back and he said, oh, doctor said, I was fine. Everything's just fine. And then I started, yeah, maybe not. I'm noticing more things. Forgetting. I realized that we both at this time, okay, we were in our 70s. And he both take a lot of medication. We're diabetics, hypertensive, old age kind of things. Mm-hmm. And he'd been setting up his medication. And I got looking at it, and I realized that we picked up some medication at the base, which is one of the best perks you've got for being a retired military, is medication is free at the base. Mm-hmm. And that it was still in the bag, that he hadn't been putting it out. It was one of the medications he needed to take for his diabetes. So this bothered me a little bit.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, no, we've got to really do something. So I said, let me go to the doctor with you. And I went to his primary care doctor, and I mentioned, and I said something about me. He said he took the test, and you said he was fine. And the doctor kind of like, no.
That's not how it went. Yeah.
So they made appointments. Let's go see a neurologist.
Okay.
I saw the neurologist. They did some more things. It boiled down to, and we're into 2016 by this time, that he had cognitive impairment. Nobody wanted to say Alzheimer's. It was mild, but they did the little test. And one of the things that kind of shocked me, we had to go into Salt Lake to the University of Utah's Cognitive Center. You had to make an appointment. It was 6 months out. You couldn't get it really good.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to give him a 2-hour test and see what was really going on. He did about a half an hour, and then he said, this is stupid, and he refused to do it anymore.
Oh.
So they told me they couldn't get it, but they did a little one in front of me, which some people might be familiar with. You have to do A to 1, to B to 2, to 3, you're drawing lines. You have mm-hmm. to name these three pictures. What are they? They give you 5 words, you repeat them back, and they ask you again in about 5 minutes what those words were. They ask you to tap your leg every time something comes with a 7. There's different, and you draw mm-hmm. things. It was a little test. But then they ask, before they did this, they ask him some questions. We're talking 2016 summer now. This is before the election. They ask him, who's the president of the United States? And he couldn't name him.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever turn to your spouse and say, hey, what's the name of the president of the United States? You just assume they know it.
Yeah.
You don't say, what happened on 9/11?
Oh my goodness.
And he said something exploded somewhere. I think it was a bomb in maybe Philadelphia. You know,
remember.
This is the kind of thing he mm-hmm. didn't know. So this happened, and I'm realizing that this is happening. And I say this jokingly, I was halfway serious. I loved the Utah area. I loved the weather. I liked the things. We had a little house, but we had no support system.
Yeah.
We're not Mormon. Nothing against the Mormons. Excuse me. I think you're supposed to now say Church of the Latter-day Saint people or something. Anyway,
okay.
They changed their nomenclature. But they are helpful. They are nice, but they more help the people in their congregations.
Yeah. Oh,
but
I
there just wasn't. And here I am. I am now 7. At that point, I was 72.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some health issues.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be around family.
Yeah.
So And we'd been talking with our kids about kind of what's going on. So I said, I don't suppose you would all consider quitting your jobs, selling your homes, leaving your kids and moving to Utah. And that didn't fly. I thought that was an excellent idea. So we put our house up for sale, which when my father passed away in 2012, he left my sister and I some annuities. Weren't gigantic, but enough to pay off the house, pay off some other debts, put money aside for college for my grandsons, and have a little cushion so that when we sold the house, and I said, selling it as is, I'm not going to go through and fix up. It was built in 1950. It's probably got some issues. Somebody can take it and flip it, which they did. And made preparations to move to the Phoenix area to be close to the kids.
Yeah. And your sister.
And my sister is in Tucson, and my sister has stage 4 COPD. I'm trying to get her to Phoenix the only help she has there, she lives in a second floor apartment. She can't hardly breathe when she walks across the room. She's on a concentrator for oxygen 24/7. I am trying to find a place that she could live closer because she has an ex-husband who's very good about taking her doctor's appointments and everything, but he is 75 and he's got health problems. Mm-hmm. If he drops over dead, she's going to be, I don't know what she's going to do. So it's nice that I'm close. I could go down and see her, but it was basically, we found a place. One of the symptoms in some people with Alzheimer's is they don't believe they have a problem. The doctor's like, I think he has a problem. Mm. He knows the way. He'll joke about going senile a little bit. I think somewhere inside he knows that this isn't quite right. But he believes he can write things down and look them up or something. Mm-hmm. I don't believe he realizes that at this point he could not tell you 15 minutes after breakfast when he had breakfast if the food's gone. Mm. His short-term memory is really bad, but he is moderate. I believe he's got another appointment. He's not as bad as it gets. He knows who I am. He knows who our kids are. He knows his grandsons are his grandsons. He just doesn't remember their names. He can remember past things. He can bring up his old serial number, which is good because it's a password I use. Mm-hmm. It's not a he can remember a social security number. He can remember his birth date. He never remembered my birthday really good. He thinks I'm 2 days older than George Washington. You'd think that would stick in his head, but it doesn't. But so, and every other move, like I mentioned, had been going to the Air Force. And this move was me. Mm. This move was our daughter came up and spent some time helping me organize. And I called 1-800-GOT-JUNK and got rid of 3 truckloads of stuff because Air Force moving, boxes that hadn't been opened, things. And I still, and this is a shameful admission, we've been here since August of 2017. There's still boxes sitting around my living room. We had a basement in Utah. Mm-hmm. Basements are lovely. You can put all sorts of things in basements and close the door. Right. And then they're gone. But so this is where we're at. We're now 2 miles. We got down here. We're 2 miles from my daughter. This came in very handy. I broke my ankle in October of 2018, and I was in a wheelchair, but I also had to be in the hospital for a few days while they decided whether they were going to do surgery or not. So she could come over and make certain he's got his medication and his insulin shot in the morning and the evening. He's okay. I worry if I leave him, he doesn't wander. That's me knocking on wood. He doesn't even like to go out of the house. But this is why, if this had been the husband that I'd married and that we traveled with, he'd be sitting here beside me telling his version which probably would contradict mine in several places of what happened.
As it always
but
does.
But he is, and it's kind of sad to me because I love him very much, but he is not really quite my Mitch.
Mm.
He is doesn't cuss at the computer anymore.
Yeah.
He's a little easier going. I think possibly there are things, though, that I don't tell him. They've told me he's not supposed to be driving.
Mm-hmm.
I just made certain that the ignition keys were off of his keychains. He's got tons of keys. And he doesn't want to. We get in a vehicle, I drive.
Yeah, yeah.
That just is the way. He doesn't really even ask to drive.
Mm-hmm.
But things that that we could talk about, I really can't talk with him anymore.
Yeah.
Because most of what I'm concerned about is him.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen. And how long can we continue living in this house before it becomes necessary to possibly move into assisted living?
Yeah.
And sometimes, Canoe, I just don't want to get out of bed in the morning.
Mm.
It's probably, I am not suicidal. I think I am a little depressed just because of the situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, and the thing is, it's nothing. And I get mad at him. And I try not to get mad at him. He can't help asking me 5 or 6 times over the same question.
Mm-hmm.
That I want to say, I just told you that. I just,
right, right.
And so it requires a lot of patience, and I am not a patient person. But I'm not the best caregiver he could have, but I am the caregiver that God gave him. I am the caregiver that he has.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids, particularly my daughter, have been very, very helpful. She'll come over and just visit, mm-hmm. which is nice. And she notices it's hard to carry on a conversation with him because he doesn't contribute. He will not initiate a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
He will talk with you. And then he'll mention, you know, when you were little, you did this. And he brings up memories, and that's true. Our son, who is a few years older than Shannon is, Stephen, I think it hit him very hard.
Yeah.
He's now questioning every time he has a little memory lapse.
Mm.
He
has it himself.
Well, you do. I mean, words escape me, or I'll look. I know that person from a movie. Who is that person?
And then
you lose a word, and all of a sudden you're wondering, you know, how's my memory? What's going to happen to me? His is not really early onset because he was in his 7th. Though I do believe there were probably little things going on for quite a while before I noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, you don't turn and ask leading questions. You don't really ask questions. I don't ask him questions too much. I've learned not to. He watches a lot of TV, lots
mm-hmm.
of TV. But I don't ask him what's going on or what the plot is because I don't believe he has any really idea what the plot is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting to him. And he'll change channels if something like this.
Mm-hmm.
He dresses himself. He can put his partials in fine. He can definitely make a pot of coffee. He's a coffee drinker from way back. He doesn't cook, which is good because I would be a little concerned about leaving him. But he does. He'll make a sandwich with toast, you know, put toast and some things in. He hasn't so far. And so far, I have been okay with leaving him for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
There might come a point when that isn't. I now, of course, go to every doctor's appointment with him, so that I can find out, you know, kind of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of, and this is something that probably will go on for some years now.
Yeah.
That, like I said, I miss the husband I have. I love the husband. I miss the husband I had. I love the husband I have.
Mm-hmm.
But I occasionally do feel like this, I can reel at the heavens. This isn't what I signed up for.
Right.
No,
right,
he was very good. We tried to say what were bad things. He was good about, he wasn't a candy and flowers type of person. But if I said, oh, you know, I would really, I wish we had some ice cream. He'd jump in the car and go to the store and buy it.
Yeah.
He would do things. He would do things. He would keep things up. He would do things for other people, like visiting my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, help. He was helpful. He still would be, I think, except that you can't really
physically
count
he can,
on it
yeah.
or something.
Sounds like he's, when you think about the languages of love, he's more acts of service. Like, he would do things for you,
mm-hmm.
like you say.
Oh, yes.
But I thank you for taking time to be here.
Oh.
I know that you can, you know, leaving him at home by himself,
yeah.
and I just appreciate from the bottom
of
my heart that you did that.
I like to tell the story of our marriage,
mm-hmm.
and how we met. And I love the wedding story because mm-hmm. I like the, hey, he's in a dressing gown. He has to get dressed to marry us. But also, and I don't know if you're going to want to leave this in or not, you can decide. I think sometimes I am a little bit of a sympathy seeker, if you know what I mean. I will mention to people who really don't need to know that my husband has Alzheimer's. And then you get the, oh, you poor thing. How are you coping?
Mm.
And I don't like that about myself, but I think that's something I do
yeah.
a little bit. So this was... But I like also, and like I said, maybe you don't want to put this coda on. And people are going to think, oh, she's a, I'm not a terrible person. I think I'm a human person. And I think you kind of cope with what happens with you however you can. And
yeah.
maybe in a way, this is my poor, pitiful Shirley. I am doing the little violin. You know where you can find sympathy.
Yeah.
It's between sex and syphilis in the dictionary. All right. And with that, thank you very much, Kenu, for having me.
No, thank you. And I do know that, you know, being a caregiver, you talked about depression,
mm-hmm.
very common. I actually did a paper in my graduate school about, you know, caregivers and
mm-hmm.
sort of what you go through. It is a very, very tough place to be because, you know, you remember your husband the way you remembered him,
mm-hmm.
and now he is who he is now, and that's hard.
And
you know.
I think just the responsibility I need, and I am a procrastinator, which doesn't do a lot of good on things, but I really need to find a good therapist that I can vent to.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't always be venting to my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Bless her heart. She doesn't mind. I ask her. I vent occasionally to my sister, but she's got her own health
yep.
problems
mm-hmm.
that I worry about.
I need the idea of a therapist for
yeah.
sure.
And this is it. And our primary care doctor, we have the same doctor. I really, really like her. And she gave me, Psychology Today has a webpage you can go to, put in your zip code, kind
and
of
then,
what you're
yep.
looking for. They
mm-hmm.
give you some things and you have to find a fit. And also the Alzheimer's Institute, which is a good thing. That's here. They are, I think they're fairly knowledgeable. They have a social worker that I talk to occasionally, but I need something more than every 6 months.
I highly recommend
yes.
it. I am a therapist myself.
Oh.
So I know exactly the
mm-hmm.
paper that I was talking to. This was during my graduate
mm-hmm.
for counseling, to have my master's degree in counseling.
You don't do counseling now, though, do you? Or do
I
you
don't.
See, darn, you
I
don't.
Don't.
See, you don't. You can't sell me a dress. You can't counsel
I know.
Me. The only thing you can do is talk to me.
I can
which
talk
is
to
good,
you and interview
good,
you.
Which is good.
But before we wrap this up,
mm-hmm.
I just had this light bulb moment as we're talking. I am determined. I want to find you those pictures. So, do you have a few minutes?
Certainly.
I want to go back to talking about that.
That?
The pictures thing.
Yes.
Because I want to get more information. We're
still
recording.
Give you much more
no,
information.
No, no, no. That's okay. That's okay.
Okay.
So, let me ask these questions. So, okay, you were talking about you were getting married.
Mm-hmm.
You did the justice of the peace,
mm-hmm.
right? And then... Talk to me about what you needed to go to the judge's house.
We went to the judge's house.
Can you explain that from justice of peace to that?
Oh, no. The justice of the peace worked out of his house.
Oh, that's okay.
He did not have It was like he worked out of his house.
So you didn't have to go to a building.
We did not have to go to a building. We went to the house. This is why we had problems finding it, because it was a little, the streets didn't necessarily all go through. So you might have a Kaiʻi Street that ended and then it picked up a little bit more in Paradise Valley. This is why we had trouble finding. That would have been really nice if there had been GPSs or maps or anything
to help
really
you get there
to find us.
So the person who was taking pictures, what was his name again?
John Brown.
John Brown. And how? What was the relationship between?
He worked with my husband. He was in the Air Force.
Okay.
And like I said, I just met them that evening when we went over there. They came with us to be the witnesses.
And he was married?
He had married to Betty Brown.
Betty Brown.
I'm pretty sure.
Did they have kids?
I don't think so, no.
At that time, anyway.
No, maybe. I think he probably was probably just in his early 20s.
Oh, okay. So they were around the same age as
you guys. We were 19. They were maybe a year or two older.
Okay.
This was my wedding day.
Yeah.
And it was just one of the little cameras that took a roll of film, and he didn't finish it up. And we did leave, I think, probably within the next 2 or 3 days.
We
wasn't time to get developed, take the rest of the things. And the time period would have been, he would have been stationed at Luke in 1965.
Okay.
I don't know when he would have gotten there, but he was there obviously in April of 1965 because we were married. That's where we were.
So you don't know like whether he was from Arizona or from somewhere else?
Oh, no.
But chances are
he was probably from
somewhere else.
And if he stayed in the service, he would have probably done the same thing we did and gone to base. And he probably, if he stayed in 20, would have retired about the same time Mitch did from active duty, which would have been in the 80s. And then heaven only knows where he settled.
Yeah.
Heaven only knows. But like I said, if you want to do the digging, there is Randolph Air Force Base, I think is still the base that does this, keeps records. There is a way that they aren't going to just give you everybody's name and contact information.
No.
They might do something where they say, we know, this is what I know. His name was John Brown. At one time I could have asked Mitch what his rank was, but I don't think Mitch would remember.
But that's okay. We have
a
name.
Or he would say, yeah.
We have a name.
You have a
place,
time period. And, Luke Air Force Base.
That's okay.
Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix, 1965.
April.
There, at least there for the beginning of the year. I think probably he'd been there a little longer because Mitch knew him.
Your kids, your daughter and your son, they don't have any of your wedding pictures at all.
No.
So this sounds to me like this is something that would be very meaningful for you to have.
Yes, if they're out there. I just see them sitting in a box in an attic.
somewhere.
Let's find them.
So podcasts, this particular one has been listened to in, when I looked last, about 66 countries.
Oh.
So we do reach a wider audience.
Good.
And I know the person we're trying to meet is probably here in the US.
Right.
But my point to that is, you never know who's listening. And they might have just looked at those pictures like, who are these people?
Yes.
And
the gentleman would have been, Mitch would have been in his dress blues, which is a blue Air Force uniform with a hat with the brim and one stripe. And I would have been in a cream colored little jacket with a slim skirt and a little blue pillbox hat.
Yeah, like a Jackie Kennedy type outfit.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely Jackie Kennedy type outfit. I still have the skirt. I have no idea what the jacket went, and there's no way on God's green earth I could even begin to get into that thing. I am twice the woman he married. Definitely. But it got folded, things, it got kind of carried around, and I think it's got a stain on it that would never come out, but it's one part of my wedding outfit, so
the hat disappeared.
Yeah. Oh, and I had little gloves on, too.
Oh, cute.
Little gloves.
See, I need to see this.
Yes.
And your daughter and your son and your grandkids, they can have, and for you, too, to have those memories. So.
Good, yes, if you have any luck with it.
I am going to try.
Okay.
All I can do is set it out to the way so people can listen to it. And then you never know who's going to listen to that. So in closing, what sort of advice would you have to people like me who are single and looking for love?
I don't know. I think mine was just lucked out. Be open to it.
Yeah.
Look at all sides of the person. Don't just go with maybe the first impression, which is what you want to trust your gut. Mm-hmm. If something says this is off,
then I
thought, a little cocky 18-year-old thinks the world of himself until I found out that he had a softer side.
Yeah.
Yes. Marry somebody that'll put up with your BS. That's it. That's the best thing. But I don't know. I wouldn't know how to go about finding it. It's sort of like it found us.
Yeah.
It was just I think if he had just called up and said, "I'm going to Florida," and I said, "Well, I see you," and he said, "Oh, probably not. It's been nice," and I would have been upset a little bit, but I don't think I would have been
okay.
Heartbroken. Mm-hmm. Oh my, it was like, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and it turned out it was.
Yeah, I'm so.
And over the years, it was just, I wouldn't say easier to stay with him, but it just worked. I am doing with my hands and people can't see things. I am making this nice little ball and gathering things up. It just worked for us, what we had, even what we have now works for us.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as well. It's kind of a broken little thing, but it's working. It's going on. So, and just keep your heart open, hon. That's all I can say.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I like how you started talking about it found you. One of the things that I talk about now is I am in my 40s. And I finally am allowing love to find me.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been on this quest of like online dating and this and this and this. And I was married before, so I did the whole marriage thing before. But now I'm in a place where I can comfortably say I am allowing love to find me.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think too, and this is just so advice calling me or something, but be happy with yourself.
Yes.
Don't make love say, if I don't find love, I'm not complete. Be complete in yourself and then you're open to it.
Yeah.
Because it isn't a need as much as an extra layer on top of this you that
it's
just adds
to
you.
It's the icing on a cake, right? Mm-hmm. The cake is there, you just ice it and you put a cherry on top or whatever that you put on. So awesome. Well, thank you for being here and sharing your story. I am going to find those pictures for you. Thank you so much for listening and all the way to the end. I am genuinely so grateful. So now you can continue to show your support in a few different ways. The first one is, if you can think of someone who might benefit from this episode, please send it to them. And the second thing is, we all are on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and the like. So please share this episode. And I love it when people tag me to their post. And three, head over to iTunes. You can leave a review and you can rate this episode. All your feedback is very helpful and it helps this podcast get visible so others can listen to all these great stories. Thank you so much. Till next time.